Welcome to this episode of Compliance Perspectives. I'm Courtney Nordrum, your host, here today with Art Weiss. Art is the Chief Compliance and Ethics Officer for TAMCO. He's also on the SCCE board and a member of our Academy and International Academy faculty. Art has come all the way from Joplin, Missouri to visit us for our Minneapolis Regional. Welcome to the podcast, Art.
Thank you.
As part of your faculty role, you teach education and training.
That's right.
And you teach compliance officers how to educate and train employees in their organizations.
Yeah, we talk about the need for education and training. We start out surveying the room and asking people why they think we even bother with education and training. And the reason for that, of course, is that people in our organizations need to know what the rules are and what the laws are, and it is the organization's responsibility to train them so that those folks understand what's expected of them so that we don't have violations. So we talk about the reasons for it, and then we go into various types of training. We talk about how to measure your training to see if it's effective, and we share ideas on some of the unique training ideas that a lot of these folks have.
Okay, well, let's circle back. Why is it necessary?
Well, the sentencing guidelines themselves require organizations to periodically train their employees. In fact, they get rather specific and say that we are expected to train employees around their specific job responsibilities. This is what you sometimes hear referred to as targeted training. Mm-hmm. For example, in any organization, everybody should probably receive training on certain various core subjects, like your code of ethics, prevention of harassment, how to use your computer, what you can and can't look at on your computer. But then when you get to the more specific areas, for example, if you're a manufacturer like we are, I have people on our production floor that need to learn about safety, and they need to learn about environmental issues. They don't need to learn about anti-corruption and bribery. They don't need to learn about antitrust. But the folks in our sales and marketing department, they need to learn about antitrust. They don't need to learn about safety or environmental. So what the government anticipates we are to do and expects us to do is to target the training to the specific job responsibilities of our employees. That way we make sure that everybody has the basics, and also that people are aware of the legal pitfalls and the rules and the requirements in doing the job that they do every day.
So when you do this, it sounded like there's two ways you can target, either by their role, so the individual's role, C-suite, board, or by the area in which they work and big risks in that area.
Yeah, most training, it's a good idea to develop your training program around your risk assessment. Mm-hmm. Because first the organization has to identify what those risks are, and then you need to develop and deliver effective training to the employees that will come into contact on a day-to-day basis, or maybe not so frequently, but will come into contact with those particular risks. And whether they come into contact with it depends on what their actual job responsibilities are.
Then you've also got the upper echelon, management, C-suite, and the board.
Yeah, since the board is ultimately responsible for overseeing the compliance program, there has to be some sort of training for board members. Most organizations will do some sort of education for their board that includes some sort of a description of the program, maybe sharing some metrics for the year. What we do every year is we prepare an annual report for the board where we talk about our policies and how we're doing against those policies, and what type of issues that we may or may not have, what type of improvements we made in the program. Basically, whatever information the board needs so that it can not only understand the compliance program, but track how we are doing, because it's ultimately their responsibility. And then middle managers is sort of a new area of training. There's been some surveys out there that show that a majority of employees look to their immediate supervisor to set the tone, to sort of model their behavior after. And so those immediate supervisors need to know how to respond when employees come to them. In fact, the study shows that more employees go to their supervisor for guidance than come to legal, HR, and compliance combined.
Really?
Okay. So the supervisor needs to know how to respond. For example, if an employee comes to the supervisor and says, Courtney is harassing me, or mm-hmm. Courtney's being mean to me, if that supervisor says, oh, Courtney is that way to everybody, or I'll talk to Courtney about it, thanks for letting me know, that may not go any further. Mm-hmm. What that supervisor needs to do is to say, well, what is Courtney saying? Is she doing it just to you? Or is she treat everybody this way? Is she doing this to you because of your religion or your age or some other factor? So the employees don't necessarily always know how to articulate what their question is. And so supervisors need some training to sort of do a little bit of due diligence and draw that out of the employees so that they can recognize the issues and report those up the chain or take some sort of action themselves.
So when we're talking about training, you do a lot of training internally at TAMCO, and you teach probably over the year thousands of individuals how to train others. What are the best practices on performing the training?
It's going to depend on the size and makeup of your organization. When I was with a major retailer with 300,000 employees, we certainly couldn't do much live training. Mm-hmm. We had a separate division that developed all the training. They would roll that out after the legal department would review and approve it, but it was not very conducive to immediate feedback and people asking questions, which is a best practice. There are some jurisdictions that require the ability to have somebody there to answer questions that may come up, and you can't really do that very easily through a computer, unless you do maybe a webinar where you've got a facilitator and a chat room open where people can ask questions. A better way to do that, but it's not always feasible, is of course live training. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing live training, then you also have to figure out a way to get people to participate. Too many organizations fall into the trap of having a sign-in sheet at the back of the room. People file in for training, they sign the sign-in sheet, they sit there for the hour or whatever the time period is, and then they go back to work. And HR sticks that attendance sheet in everybody's personnel folder, and if somebody asks what kind of training program you have, they dig out the attendance sheet. Well, the fact that you were at the training doesn't mean you participated. You don't get to exchange ideas, you don't get to be challenged, you don't get to work together and actually interactive training. Interactive training, scenario-based training, those are generally the best ways to do that. A lot of organizations will try to get some sort of creative participatory training. One method is to have little handheld devices where the employees can vote. The way that would work is you put on your presentation and you give everybody one of these control devices, looks like a small calculator, and you embed questions inside your PowerPoint slides. And then you ask the audience a question. You ask them to select a correct example, or correct answer, for example. And rather than having people shyly raise their hand or not raise their hands at all because they're afraid of being embarrassed for getting the wrong answer, they can vote anonymously on these little clicker devices. And the instructor can then see whether the entire room has voted. And you move on to the next slide. And you can get instant feedback as far as the number and the percentage of answers that were correct. Benefit of that is not only are the people able to answer the question anonymously, but you then have immediate feedback as to how the room did. So that if only 30% of the people in the audience got the answer to your question correctly, you can immediately stop and go back and go through that again. Other organizations will play games such as Jeopardy, Newlywed Game, maybe, you know, any kind of a game that they can come up with, and they make a competition out of it. They may have small prizes, whether it's a gift card, whether it's lunch for that particular department, something to make it fun. People remember that. The other thing that you really need to remember to do is do some sort of a survey of your employees and find out what they think of that training. The fact that they like the training, however, does not necessarily mean that it's effective. So you also need to measure whether that training worked. One of the ways that that's done, probably the primary way that that's done, is through testing. If you test the first year before your training, you get a baseline as to your entire audience. For example, is the percentage of questions that were answered correctly before your training. That becomes your baseline. Then in year two, when you do your training again, you give a similar exam to your audience, and take a look at whether the percentage of correct answers went up. If it did, you've proved retention, which is the ultimate goal of any training program, is to get the employees to understand that. So testing is a good way to measure whether or not your training has been effective. If a year after you gave this class, they are getting the answers correct.
When you say testing, my brain immediately thinks about people who may not be literate, may have different languages that they're more comfortable with, and may not be comfortable in English. So if you're giving the tests in that way, how do you work around those kinds of challenges?
You're going to have to understand what your audience. You got to make sure that you don't talk over your audience's head. You have to make sure that you do the testing, make it available in any particular language that your workforce enters into. If you have people that can't read, for example, then you maybe should have an employee read those questions to them. The tests are not terribly complicated. For example, if you're doing a test on prevention of harassment, a typical question would be, if you walk into a room with a bunch of coworkers and you ask them if anybody's going to be offended by you telling a joke, and everybody says, yeah, that's fine, it's not going to bother me, can you tell that joke?
And don't tell the joke.
So, you know, try to pick up real life situations that the employees would face. It doesn't have to be terribly complicated.
If you are struggling and you don't have many resources, your compliance team is bare bones, what is the case to measure the effectiveness?
One way that an organization can measure effectiveness is there's anything that can be collected and measured. It doesn't cost you much, if anything, to collect the data that you have. For example, if you sell to the public, you certainly keep statistics on your customer service calls. Some people will monitor their hotlines to see whether there's a rise in hotline calls after training. Mm-hmm. That scares a lot of people the number of hotline calls increased.
That's a good thing.
But it is a good thing, because if you've gone out and you've conducted training in a particular area and you've raised the awareness, and then all of a sudden after that training is complete, you see a spike in your hotline calls reporting that kind of behavior, that's because you have trained the people as to what to look for. Mm-hmm. So that can be a good thing. If you're in a manufacturing environment, you may want to measure the safety incidents. You know, you can always measure things like lawsuits and enforcement actions, but those don't come around all that often, hopefully, and that's trying to prove a negative. But there's always data out there that can be measured.
When we're talking about training, there's also, and compliance in general, there's also the legal side of it. Are there any concerns with training creating legal risks?
Training can create legal risks if you get the answers wrong. What we did when we switched from computer-based training to live training, when I started doing our prevention of harassment and code of ethics training live, we started to measure and keep track of the questions. Mm-hmm. I would keep track of all the questions that the employees at all of our locations would ask after the training. And we'd go back and we'd go through those questions and we'd go over the answers that we gave, and we'd make sure that those answers were correct, make sure that those answers were consistent, and then we would put together some Q&As and some so that the people that actually might do the training on a local level in between the annual training would be answering consistently with what we had said before. That way you can control the message, you make sure it's consistent, and you make sure you're not giving out incorrect information. Because if you give out incorrect information and people act on it, you've created a legal risk, and you're worse off than you would have been had you not said anything.
Should you run your questions or your training by legal?
I don't always run the questions by legal. The presentations mm-hmm. should be run past legal. It depends on what the topic is. And depending upon what the topic is and what the legal risk is, that's going to probably determine who creates the training. If you're training people on simple, everyday employee handbook rules, like whether or not you can smoke on the company property or what parking lot you're supposed to use, I don't think legal needs to review that thing, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. But things that have a high risk, whether you're talking about salespeople meeting with competitors or talking to competitors that they run into at an association function, or what they can say to the people they're trying to sell things to. Anything that might have a legal risk, I think that training does need to be run past the legal department. Many cases, in some specialized areas, the training may even need to be run past outside counsel.
Really? Overall, what are your top three best practices for training?
Participation is one. You need to find something that is interactive where the employees can participate. The second thing is continuous improvement. Always change that training. The other thing that we use those questions for is to point out areas there that people might not get. And if we're getting a lot of questions on a particular topic, that might mean that we are not covering that topic properly. Or it might mean that there are new issues that have come up since the last time that we reviewed the training. And that's the third issue, is to make sure that you keep it current, keep up with any changes in your business model, any changes in how you do things, any changes in laws. You need to make sure that that training is kept current. If you have just completed a training cycle in May and you go into a new business model in July, you're going to need to change your training. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you've done another risk assessment because the risks have changed. And so you're also going to need to change the training to keep up with that.
Well, Art, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule here in Minneapolis to speak with me.
It was a pleasure.